You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. I wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat, a 6 foot and baller. I wish I was like 6'9" so I could get with Leo. She cause she don't know me, but yo, she's really fine. You know, I see her all the time, everywhere I go.
Hello and welcome to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast, where today we come off the back of a 1-1 draw away at Brentford, stopped the rot after a few defeats in a row. It was a decent performance, I thought, overall. I was there yesterday. Probably let you know now, very hungover today. If anyone's watching me on YouTube, I'm very fluffy. I've lost my hat. It's one of them, mate. And do you know what? We're going to go straight in with a clip as well. I can do this one today. This is me.
It's just whatever. Everyone's had a drink.
Yeah, that was me yesterday. But look, I'm all right. Looking forward to the podcast today. Jack is in South Africa, so he's not with us today. We are, though, going to be joined a little bit later on by Cholsey from Union FS to talk about the singing section and some of the problems we've had there, and just get an update in general about what they're doing at the moment. So we'll do that a little bit later on. Joined by Rick and Jordan. Rick, that song choice was suggested and picked by yourself. I like it, mate. Good one.
Yeah, they obviously mention Brendan's size, don't they? So I thought it was worth bringing in. But we wish we got a point. We wanted three, didn't we, really? I mean, is 1 point good enough? The performance was better for... I have to hold my hands up. I was away yesterday, so I couldn't get to the game, didn't get to see it. I've seen extended highlights, but overall performance did look like it was a proper performance. It wasn't a fortuitous point. And yes, we need wins, but yeah, take the positives if we can, because we're fighting for our lives. So
yeah, no, I mean, I'm feeling relatively optimistic. I know, yeah, quite strangely today about that performance. But Rick, last week, we've got to talk about last week's episode. It was pure chaos, led, directed by yourself. Are we going to have similar today?
No, I don't think I've got it in me today. last week was a funny one because the week before I wasn't happy with my contribution. My connection was poor. I was having to sort of mind the kids as well. I wasn't happy and I was angry with what was going on. So last week I had a lot of pressure on my shoulders to deliver, and I don't know whether I did deliver. It was just utter nonsense. But I don't know. I don't want you in for a boring episode from me, but because I don't bring any actual content in terms of football related knowledge. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be hard to peak with that, with fingering eels and all sorts. What on earth was I on about with that? I don't even know whether I meant that. I mean, who knows?
Honestly, the amount of people who've asked me and messaging me, what did you have to edit out from Rick last week?
Yeah, and obviously I've had a lot of people ask me. Well, no, I mean, it's not even that exciting, to be honest. It just came out badly, didn't it? And wasn't worth putting in. But yeah, I think the mystique is probably better than what it actually was. So whatever. Maybe if we stay up, we'll tell you. But
yeah, I'm still not sure. But anyway, no. Jordan, mate, how are you, pal?
I'm really well, mate. It seems like one in, one out at the minute, doesn't it? I was obviously in Germany last week, Jack's in South Africa this week, and it seemed I enjoyed the episode last week, but it seemed like, you know, Rick was off the leash because the week before
it was chaos, he was
very quiet. And I just think for anyone who's listening this week, that's one what happens when I'm not trying to reel Rick back in, I think. With his anti Rogers tirade.
I read some of your texts this week, pal. Some of your texts this week were wavering.
We'll come on to that, I imagine. And then two, again, that is an insight into the chaos that is our WhatsApp group. And Rick's 11-minute voice notes on Robbie Williams concerts. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. It all points to an audience with Rick and the big, strong Leicester boys at Everard's Brewery at the end of the season. And I'm happy to champion that for charity because I think that'd be a good do.
Yeah. Well, look, seeing as we've mentioned it now, if that's something people would want, then we can definitely look to try to do that at the end of the season. I think it'd be great. But Jordan, other than people asking me what Rick said last week, the other thing that people have been constantly saying to me this week is Jordan still Brendan Rodgers in? That they're the two topics, mate, that I get asked more than anything about this podcast. You know, about Rick and his chaos, and you and your Brendan Rodgers in. I know we haven't even spoken about the game yet, but I'm sure you still get kind of hammered for this or asked about it, you know, nonstop, right?
Oh, in my other WhatsApp groups, I'm the only one who I get hammered because I always say, "Oh, we'll be fine," and every week it comes out. Last week on the stag do, I said, "I tell you, you're in trouble, Palace.
Yeah,
Palace are in trouble." And they're like, "But we've just lost to Chelsea and we're below them." I'm like, "Yeah, but Palace are in trouble." I did think yesterday if we'd lost, I was thinking, I think the only thing we could have done is change the manager. But I feel like I've been pigeonholed as the Rodgers in brigade on my own now. Maybe we're a silent majority, but. Well, you know, we got a point yesterday. I don't think they'll sack him now. I think they'll give him to the end of the season anyway. Either way, you know, it's international break now. And we've got enough there, surely, to get the points on the board. But, yesterday, you know, I said in the group, Rick, didn't I, if we didn't win yesterday, what would it have been, 6 defeats on the bounce? And I'm sure I'm right in saying, under the King Power regime, you know, maybe 6 defeats on the bounce have never been done, or if it had, it was like the end for the manager. So I did think
he survived, didn't he? Yeah, at the start of the season, then it was like he got Forest, didn't he? And by the skin of his teeth, and we battered him. But yeah, you're right.
I can understand why, you know, people don't want him here anyway, but I'm not like so ultra Rodgers in that he has to stay at all costs. You know what I mean?
It'd be absolute
disaster if we get relegated. But you know, I do think Jack's still on the fence, and yourself, Jake, you've wavered a little bit recently. But yesterday there were again some positive signs. Whether it's just a little bit too late, we'll see. But I thought we played quite well.
It is an interesting one though with Rodgers because. I believe, I was told by somebody that had Leicester lost yesterday, Brendan would have been sacked. And you look at it on the face of it, as you then head into that international break, and then you've got the next 3 games against what is it, Palace, Villa, and Bournemouth. It would be the time to do it, and it's actually quite strange in some ways because obviously you never want the team to lose. But say, for instance, if you really, really did want the change to happen, then there probably would have been part of you which would have been okay with Leicester losing yesterday because it would have meant that Brendan then would have lost his job. But, you know, just drawing that game now, which doesn't do loads really for our chances of staying up, and it now probably guarantees that he'll stay to the end of the season. That's my feeling and attitude towards it anyway. And then I want to actually talk about Brendan Rodgers and some of the stuff which happened in the stands a little bit later on. We'll do it after we speak to Cholsey, but let's actually talk about the game first of all. See, I was there yesterday. I enjoyed it. I actually thought the atmosphere in the away end was really good yesterday. One of the few times where I thought we were significantly louder than the home end. And I think we actually made a difference yesterday. I thought we were good. I thought we were really good. The performance itself in the first half, I think I said to you guys, it was kind of same old Leicester in that we were decent. We were playing nice stuff, but too easy to score against and not taking our chances. But, you know, but we were all right. It's like the same things I say every week. We're never dreadful. We're just okay. We're decent. And then the second half, we were the much better team. And I was thinking about it. I don't think Daniel Iverson had any saves to make other than the goal he conceded. So Leicester were by no means battered. They were comfortable. But I don't think we really probably carved out enough opportunities in the end to have said that we deserved to win that game. I thought that Harry Suter was outstanding. I thought comfortably the best player on the pitch. Still a little bit limited at times with the ball at his feet, but that's fine. But I thought defensively he was rock solid and really led that back line, marshalled it. You know, and someone who's 6'6" should be winning his headers, but he won all of them. And also I thought another positive was Wilfred Ndidi. You know, we've been saying it for a little while now that he needs to find some form. And I thought that that's the best he's played in a long time. Again, you know, still not the levels he once was, but I think that's the best indeed he has played in a long, long time. So overall, I thought it was a decent performance, a decent point. But unfortunately, because of the other results as well, it doesn't do huge amounts, does it, for the league position. But, you know, if you're going to do some managerial speak and some Rodgers stuff, it's something to build on, isn't it, Rick?
As I say, I didn't get to see the game live, but I've caught extended highlights and tried to read up on unbalanced reviews and reports and stuff. But yeah, the Suter, from what I saw, I mean, there was one run in the second half where he sort of marauded forward, didn't he? And he nearly had a shot that got blocked.
Yeah, he did.
It reminded me of Harry Maguire, that. And we need a defender like that. We've missed that since Fofana's gone. They're different players, but we do need that because we defend high. So if you defend high, you need your defenders to also break the lines as well, because otherwise it can be quite static. So, yeah, I mean, the one that I wanted to talk about as well, that we've not hammered him because he's been bad. We've probably stuck up for him and said he needed a breather. But Dewsbury Hall yesterday was far, far better.
He was.
You know, he's always going to be scruffy with his first touch. And the way that you get Dewsbury Hall as a force is you open up the pitch so he can drive forward. And the only place he does that is in that left side of midfield, in the central midfield. Why Brendan moved him to the right side of central midfield for a while, it just didn't work because he's only got one foot. He was always checking back. And with a bad first touch, he was often then getting dispossessed. But you get him on the ball. And then at the minute, we haven't got Christiansen out there, but Castagna and with Barnes, that little triangle that opens up the pitch, it worked. And, you know, look at his pre-assist for Barnes's goal. And that was even him taking the ball and, you know, winning it and it being a bit of a bobbling around where he can sometimes come out second best. That was what we've been missing. It's just nice to be able to talk about some meaningful things in a game and hope that he can now build on it, because we need Dewsbury Hall. You know, we need players that it means, not saying that the majority of this squad won't care if we get relegated, but he knows what's on the line here. Not only for himself, because yes, he's a Premier League player, but he doesn't guarantee walk anywhere else, I don't think. He'd be dropping down into the Championship with us and he wouldn't necessarily be coming back up. So he knows what's on the line. And I felt from what I saw yesterday, he put in the performance that we need for the rest of the season and so on. So, and did he look like he won some challenges and marshalled better? Barnes, you know, he'd been fairly quiet, hadn't he, in recent weeks. It was but yeah, we're going into the break now. We stop the rot. Okay, from a points position where we are in the table, we're not really achieved that much, other than at least we've not lost, and Brentford at home are quite a formidable beast. You know, I still am where I am with Brendan. I don't think he is the man to take us forward long term. Is he the man to even keep us up? I don't think so. But the board are the board. And I don't even think if we'd lost yesterday, they would have sacked him, because I still think there's a genuine just blind spot there that they don't know what to do with. So, yeah, I can't really say anything more. I'm not going to flip-flop. He's certainly not done enough, because the subs yesterday, we looked like we had momentum and we got the bit between our teeth to perhaps be the team to go on and win it.
Yeah.
He took Tete off, who, obviously, I was Tete's number one fan and still am. He'd had a relatively quiet game with a few flashes of brilliance. That sort of 5 minutes prior to when he realised he wanted to take him off, he came to life. And likewise, Daka's movement off the ball looked a lot better yesterday. And he brought Pratt and Vardy on, and I don't think they did enough to warrant us winning the game. Whereas Tete and Daka, I think we would have created at least one more goal-scoring chance that arguably, you take that, you've won the game. So, yeah, I feel like our subs at the minute are just not good enough. Okay, maybe a lack of options, but...
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what it is, to be honest. I mean, I don't really have that much of an issue with the subs. You know, he's bringing on like-for-like players in terms of a winger and a striker, you know, to freshen things up. But, yeah, the reality is that neither Pratt or Vardy did have an impact. And in hindsight, yeah, you're right. We should have either just stuck with the two or maybe brought on Iheanacho or done something else. But I just think, yeah, it's probably made a lack of options in terms of, you know, there's no real point bringing on Pratt as a winger because he's not a winger. And even if Tete is playing quiet, you're probably better off keeping him on the pitch unless he's tiring. But he didn't appear to be. But no, I agree, Matt, on Dewsbury Hall. I thought it was his best game for a while. Again, you know, not brilliant, but a lot better. And interestingly, on that defensive line, which we spoke about before, I feel like they did sit deeper yesterday. I felt like they did, and I think that maybe, and so we'll have to wait and see, Jordan, if, you know, next time we play, but maybe, just maybe, because usually managers are stubborn and they don't change, but maybe Brendan has looked at that and just told him to sit, you know, 5 yards deeper, because I did get that feeling yesterday that we weren't as high, and that obviously suited Amati and Harry Suter, who looked solid and looked very decent yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it probably suits Suter and more so Amati. I imagine that they've got Ivan Toney to look after. He's not going to go in behind you. He's not got the pace. And I think they had Wissa and Mbeumo either side. They're both rapid.
They're quick, handful, yeah.
And then obviously our fullbacks are pretty capable and they're fairly quick. But yeah, I do agree. I think we looked a little bit deeper, probably 10 yards further back than especially the Southampton game. Suter was absolutely marvellous. Like I say, it suits him playing someone against Ivan Toney. Do you know what? This is a side point. I still don't understand why everyone raves about Ivan Toney, to be honest. But Castagna, probably his best game for a few weeks over at left back. I know he doesn't want to play left back, but he played quite well. Amati still looks like a bomb scale and he's got the ball at his feet, but he just defended comfortably.
There was one point, though, sorry, in the first half where a ball came flying over the top of Amati and he did the most perfect, beautiful touch, just plucked it out of the sky and then just played it then back to Iversen in goal. And it was just like, if you'd never watched Daniel Amati play football before that point, you would have thought he was incredible. It just plucked it beautifully, jawed out the sky.
He did a cross turn on the edge of his own box as well. And I said to my dad, like, he's obviously, you know, he's bereft of confidence and he is a bit of a bomb scare. I like Amati because he's come into the team more often than not and done a fairly solid job. And I don't know what more you can ask for him. And I said to my dad yesterday, this guy played in the World Cup. You know, he can't be that fucking bad. He played in the World Cup. But you mentioned it there, Iversen, huge call to change the keeper.
Yep.
I came on this pod a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, I defended Danny Ward. And then at the first goal last week, I just thought, I can't really defend him anymore. Even the second goal was just like, come on. Yeah. I just wonder if changing the keeper made the back four a little more confident in themselves as well. And we looked very solid. I mean, I think Mbeumo had he whistled one wide. And then their goal... Again, it's a set piece. It was pretty soft, but it takes two deflections.
Exactly.
I don't know about you. I can't remember the last time we got a bit of luck like that, where we're getting two deflections and it's going under the keeper and going in. And that's what happens when you're down there. I have to say, I missed the WhatsApp chat before. I wish I was a little bit taller. That did go over my head, that joke. And I actually thought it was to do with Suter and Ndidi, because Wolf comes back in. I thought Wolf was a bit untidy in terms of possession. He gave the ball away a few times, but it looked a bit like the Wolf of old. And again, like, I mean, I used to live in Brentford. I used to watch them quite a lot at Griffin Park, and they used to play some lovely stuff. As soon as they come up to the Prem, the first time I saw them players, he's turned them into like a modern day version of Stoke, like long throws, drill it forward up to Tony. So that suits Suter and especially Ndidi. So I can see why he brought Wilf back in. Tete, I thought, played okay. I think he's getting a bit of unwarranted stick, to be honest. He's coming into a struggling side. He's never played in the Prem. He needs to get used to the pace and the physicality. And like you said, Rick, before he came off, he nearly scored an absolute wonder goal. He did the little Brazilian dribble through two lads and his shot was blocked and it was on target. I didn't think the subs were right, Pratt on, and Vardy's got no pace anymore.
But what would you have done? Yeah, what would you have done?
I'd left it as it was for a bit. We were on top.
Yeah.
And I was going to come on to Dewsbury Hall in a minute, but I thought Maddison was pretty poor by his standards.
Yes.
And the thing is with Maddison is, I noticed it the other week, I can't remember who he played, and all the pundits, it was Southampton, all the pundits went, oh, Maddison, he's bloody brilliant. And I thought, well, that was him. That was a 5 out of 10 for him.
Yeah.
But the thing is you get with Maddison is his 5 and 6 out of 10, he's still our best player.
Mm. I was saying this afterwards, George, that he wasn't at his best yesterday. And the difference was, if he had been somewhere close to his best, we would have won that game yesterday. That was the only thing lacking, that little bit of spark, which he just didn't quite have yesterday. And say it's not a criticism of him, because you can't expect him to carry us every single game. But if he was at that level, we would have won. It was that kind of close margins, I think.
And that's what, you know, like a lot of the time with someone like, not just Maddison, but, you know, players of that, in Pearson's word, of that ilk, a lot of the time, they're always trying to play the through ball, like a needle in a haystack pass, and they give it away. They try the complicated thing. And if it doesn't come off 9 out of 10 times, you get so angry with them. The one pass, goal. Great finish from Barnes, but that one pass, you know, he's the only player in the team that could thread that through to Barnes.
And again, that's the thing, Barnes, is he says he had a quiet game, but he's still laid on that goal for Barnes. And, you know, so it's just one of them players, isn't it? That even when he's not at his best, he's still so important. And it's weird with Amati, you know. I was thinking this, because I've got a soft spot for Big Dan, always have done. But the problem is, obviously, he isn't brilliant. But he's just a little bit short, Jordan, of being good enough to be a cult hero. He's just not quite a good enough player to be a cult hero. Do you know what I mean? I want to love him and I want to play. Like, if he was just a little bit better, I'd be happy with him playing every week, because he has got, you know, some good attributes. But unfortunately, he's just a level too short of being good enough to be a cult hero.
And again, it told for me yesterday. You look at the bench. I think you mentioned the subs earlier. Evans, he's not fit. We need to offload him. He's never fit. Although he'll probably play twice for Northern Ireland in the cup, you know, this week.
Yeah.
Sainchu's obviously, he's not. He's never going to play for us again. Vestergaard, not going to waste my breath on him. So Lewis Brunt is on the bench too, and Fez is suspended. So your options are Dan Amai or Dan Amai. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
I that's why I like him, because, I mean, he makes mistakes because in terms of, like, technically he's not good enough, but you can never fault his effort and his application. And he's just the kind of dependable player. And yeah, I can't slate Dan too much. And I was going to come on to KDH, because it's what you said, Rick, pre-assist, which I know when Jack listens to this back, he will be choking on his South African lager. Pre-assist. That's terrible. He obviously played it to Maddison and we scored. But KDH, I rate him. I was thinking yesterday, if Thielemans was fit and then Ndidi was, you know, Ndidi'd be first choice.
Yeah.
Thielemans and Maddison, you'd drop KDH.
Yeah,
which seems a bit harsh, but one of the questions on the Foss Way was he a future captain? And it made me kind of think, well, if we're in the Championship, yeah, but you forget he's 6 months younger than Yuri, but he's still, you know, like you said, it's a big couple of games coming up for him now, because he's been a mainstay in the team. For me, he deserved his place in the team. And it was good to see him back to his best yesterday. And, you know, it's good to have local lads in there. So, on the whole, yeah, really, I think it was really positive. Foot first, until they scored, I thought we looked fairly comfortable. And then they scored, it was like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah. And also, it's another unwanted record, which you've now managed to get rid of, where we'd been, every game we'd been losing at half time, we'd lost. So we actually managed to turn that around. So that's decent again, something to build on. And like Rick, on the goalkeeper then, it is a big decision, isn't it, with a goalkeeper? Because you're always going to give a goalkeeper a little bit longer.
you are. I think, I mean, Rodgers, he's made the change this week, so we shouldn't slate him. And I think it's the right decision.
Yeah.
What he said after the game, though, was quite jaw-dropping, because he's basically had a conversation with Ward. He's told him he's not been good enough, and he's only persevered with him because he was a loyal number two for so long, and he wanted to give him every opportunity to, you know, to deliver, which is a noble thing to do. But when you're doing what we're doing, I feel like he should have made that decision at least a couple of games ago. You know, there was... I get we got to the World Cup and we'd won some games, and he didn't seem to be as much of a problem as he had been at the start of the season. But yeah, the last couple of months, I think it was quite clear that we needed to try Iverson. I mean, why we didn't go out and buy another goalkeeper, I don't know, but let's just put that to one side. Yeah, the comments he made, I just feel like, it might be all too late, because how many points could Iverson have maybe saved us? You know, if it was only one or two points, that could be the difference. But at least now it feels like Iverson is going to get a run of games. Ward may have played his last game for us, which some of us will be quite thankful of. But, you know, Iverson's still got to step up and do it. And I'm confident he can. As you say, it felt like defensively yesterday we played a bit deeper. We looked to go a bit more direct if needs be, rather than passing the ball, which suited Amati's limitations on the ball. And maybe Iverson, you know, Iverson's not quite got the footwork. So if we've got to do that, we've got to do it.
Yeah. And there was a couple of times yesterday where Iverson's distribution wasn't perfect, to say the least. I think it is the right decision. You do just get that sense from the goalkeeper. You just feel safer, you know, and sometimes it's quite a strange thing, isn't it, George, that, you know, there isn't that much science to it, but you just get that sense of, I just feel more confident and more comfortable with Iverson in goal. You just get that sense with Danny Ward that he just never really was in complete control. He didn't really have that much confidence, and just ultimately just wasn't making enough saves, is what it boils down to, doesn't it, as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think there was a stat. He's got the worst shot to goal ratio in the league.
Yeah, it's one of the worst.
We do concede a lot of chances and a lot of shots, so maybe that's a bit misleading. But I said before with Ward, he seems to me, and I tried to stick up for him as long as possible.
Because, to be honest. You need to with a goalkeeper, I think. And, you know, it's not a decision that you can keep swapping over. You need to give him time. And, you know, I think that Brendan was right to give him time, you know, because he's only got the two options. You know, once he's made that decision for Danny Ward to be the number one, you have to give him every possible opportunity. And I think that obviously the Chilwell goal last week was the final straw, wasn't it, for Brendan? You know, I think he made the right decision there.
Mm. Yeah, it feels that way because, you know, Ward's been a number two his whole career. He's been at Liverpool. We signed him for a fairly hefty fee for a keeper who's got no experience in the Prem as a number one, replacing the best keeper we've ever had. And you have, and you know, it's a bit like I say, like before, like a striker, both ends of the pitch, most important positions, really. But you have to give them a run of games. You can't just throw them in and out and expect them to perform. And I've said before with Ward, it just reminds me of De Gea, when De Gea came over and he was quite thin, wasn't very commanding at crosses and things like that. And they persisted with him. They're in a completely different position, right? But when Ward's coming into the team, and there's so much going on, and obviously we start struggling, that becomes a position of real focus. But when Iverson was in yesterday, he's a big fucker. And it, I don't know, it just seems like he's just a safer option.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said about his distribution. I ain't bothered about that. Just just bang it out of play 70 yards from your goal if you have to. You know, there's the obsession with keepers trying to play a bit of football as well now. But what happened to just slinging it down the pitch and seeing what happens? That don't bother me at all. So, yeah, it looks like Iverson's going to get a run of games. And it did just feel like, in general, that the team looked a bit more secure and a bit more confident. It was a big call because, you know, like you said, Rodgers could possibly have got sacked if we lost the game. It was a bit of a rumour. So, big call, the right call. Don't actually recall him making too many saves, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I think it was a fairly straightforward afternoon for him. But yeah, I think we're all in agreement, probably the right decision. We're going to speak to Chelsea now from Union FS about everything that's been happening this season. There's been lots of issues, frankly, and you know, the relationship there isn't a particularly good one at the moment. And I know there's a survey happening at the moment. So let's speak to Chelsea now. Okay, then, joined now by Chelsea from Union FS. Mate, thanks for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. Just about recovered from my stag do that was mentioned on last week's pod with Jordan. It was a bit of a struggle of a week, if I'm honest, but I'm about right now.
Yeah,
well, he had a nap, Jake. Saturday afternoon, he had a nap.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, just after the Duisburg 1860 Munich game. Seen enough, to be honest. I needed a little bit of a kick.
You just didn't want to see the Chelsea game either, did you?
Yeah, and I avoided all highlights of that, to be fair. Still made it out longer than you did that night, George, to be fair.
That's true. That's very true. But I had Mr. S or Mr. J, whatever we call him these days, in tone.
Yeah, fair.
Well, look, mate, what we want to talk about today is, well, a few things, really, regarding the club and Union FS, because it has been something that, well, there's been quite a few things rumbling on for a little while now. So we thought it'd be good to get someone on to talk about it and get your views and a little bit more information on what is happening from your side. I mean, is my understanding right? We're going to have a survey about the singing section, which you've had this season, and about whether it's going to continue or not. Where are we at the moment with the singing section, and what have you been told about this?
Yeah, that's right, Jake. So I think there's two surveys about to come out or be released by the club. They may well have been released by the time the pod actually drops. The premise of the survey is obviously just to have a understanding of how people within the section and outside of the section view how it's gone this year, in terms of like whether or not it's added to the atmosphere, made the atmosphere worse, whether there's been any other issues around sort of like fans' behaviour or whatever during the season so far. As what we would say from a UNFS perspective is that obviously we feel like the section's gone well, but could be a lot better if we weren't watching absolute dross for the vast majority of the season. I think if the communication from the outset from the club was a little bit better, that might have helped things a little bit. Obviously, with people being kicked out of their seats, etc., I feel like that probably put us on the back foot a little bit. But I still strongly believe it's better than it would have been this season had the section not been in place. So I do feel like we're moving in the right direction. Strongly believe, obviously, that this is starting to become a platform for us going forward. And the club obviously exploring quite substantially safe standing. And what we want to see from them in that regard is probably more of a QPR model than maybe just adding a rail in front of the seats like we have seen some away games this year in the Premier League. So there's plenty there for us to kind of basically work with. But clearly we've had a few issues over the last month or so that probably set the group back a little bit, set the section back a little bit as well.
Yeah. Is there a chance then that we're not going to have this next season if the survey goes a particular way?
Well, I think it was always badged the section as a 1-year trial.
Yeah.
I think it would be pretty difficult for the club to renege on that at the end of the season. I probably think they'd cause a lot more problems than it's worth by actually saying, okay, well, we move everyone back out of that section and have the people that were there beforehand move back in. However, it's not within the realms of possibility that could happen. But I think it would be a big backward step.
George?
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, I know Chelsea quite well, obviously, but I'm not necessarily, I suppose, a contributed member to UFS or a fully fledged member, but obviously support what the group does and then sit slightly behind. So I just want to know what the reasoning was with the club that they moved it to where it was in the first place. And then touching on the Tottenham game, because I think I mentioned it the other week, I couldn't really see anything that had gone particularly wrong. And I've just checked, actually, I just Googled it. But that was our first home win since October. So you're knocking on for 5 months and you beat Tottenham 4-1. So obviously you're going to have a bit of a good atmosphere with a singing section that you've designated. And then there seemed to be a bit of trouble. So it just seems a bit of an odd one.
Yeah, so firstly on the sort of the location of the section. So I think that was born directly out of what us working with the club, identifying areas where we could move closer to the pitch, hopefully have a bigger area, because obviously previously where we were probably only the back 10 rows, if that, and that just wasn't enough for us to be able to actually make sure that the atmosphere is carrying around the stadium. So moving slightly closer to the front, setting up where we did, felt it gave us an opportunity to do that and potentially move on from that point as and when safe standing eventually is introduced. So that's that question. Then the second one on the incidents at the Spurs game. So yeah, like you say, George, really positive day from a footballing sense. Not had many of those this season. Do feel there's a fair amount of like boisterousness in that area that particular day. Also interesting developments from the club at the outset of that was there was a couple of police officers stationed at the front of the section filming the area, which hadn't happened before. I think there was a little bit of ill feeling around that, and whether or not actually that was actually anything to do with us or not is another matter. A few small minor indiscretions that day that were perhaps not dealt with well on either side, to be frank. And I think the resulting from that has obviously been some bans issued to UNFS members. We obviously feel they were a bit out of line with what we would expect. They're like things that you probably see countless times across stadiums, like every single match, which it feels like we're being held to a slightly higher account than other fans, perhaps, which is, it leaves a bit of a bitter pill to taste, really, given the relationship we've had actually built up with the club since 2013. So, yeah, a bit of a tough month or so, really, for the group.
I mean, the atmosphere at the ground, I think, is something that has been a bit of a sticky point, I suppose, since we won the league or the Champions League. Like you say, you've worked with them for 10 years now. So it seems like, you know, they're kind of... Obviously, there was the trials in the cup, which were over the other side of the stadium in the family end. And then it just seems they're kind of, from an outsider's kind of perspective, you know, there's a lot of imagery on the website, on the social feeds. And everyone wants the atmosphere to be better. So it seems like the relationship, obviously it's difficult for both sides to manage the relationship, but I don't get why it can't be best for both, for the club going forward in terms of the atmosphere. Because at the minute, I mean, like you said earlier, the football is terrible. At least if we had like a half decent atmosphere when we're losing 1-0 at home to Villa next week, then that's a kind of a minor positive.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have been part of the starting of the group if I didn't feel like it had a major impact on how the team perform. Atmosphere is integral to like the team's performance. You can argue it to the cows come home and got what comes first, chicken egg situation around, the players have to perform for the atmosphere to be there. I don't really believe that, if I'm massively honest. Like, the fans can drive for better performance from the players. And we have to be there for the rest for the team from now to the end of the season. And I think we need to be supported from that respect from the club, to give us that sort of a little bit of leeway with certain things like waving flags, standing. They already sort of allow us to stand in that area pretty uninhibited in comparison to certain areas of the ground as well. So I feel like, we have been a little bit of, I guess, of course, had some problems over the last sort of month or so where we would have liked to have avoided them. In reality, what we need is that the whole group, the whole section, the whole stadium really getting behind the team, regardless of your thoughts on the manager, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to generate sort of an atmosphere that's going to help us with our home form, which over the last 18 months has been the worst in the league of remaining teams that haven't already been relegated, probably.
Yeah, Chelsea, so what do you think the plan is going forward? Obviously, you've had some sticky moments recently that ideally wouldn't have happened and you'd want the club to support you a bit more in this. What are you lot trying to do? Because, you know, I'm reading a little bit of negativity as well, which I think is unfair on you lot. You know, the whole purpose of the atmosphere you're trying to create is there's no negative to that, because otherwise there is nothing. You know, there's no other atmosphere in the ground. So, have you got, you know, what you're going to try and do to navigate through it?
I think first and foremost, we kind of stay to our sort of overriding principles, which is support the team at all costs, really. Like, we know we've had the same sort of comments since we started, like, that are negative. People are just not going to like us. Some people have taken that view from since day one. That's fine. That's their own prerogative. You get it anywhere in England. It's a bit of an alien concept to a lot of fans, like the Homestead Fanatics. It's like Crystal Palace get absolutely hammered by people, but in reality, they've driven a pretty good atmosphere at Selhurst Park for 20 years almost now. We know that we're in a sort of similar boat in terms of actually polarising opinion. We've got to continue that. We've also got to remind ourselves of like you say, Rick, the overwhelming, I would say, fan base are positive about the fact, an understanding of the fact that without the group there, actually the atmosphere would be completely flat. That was part of the point of what we did against Arsenal. We didn't want to go to that game and be silent. That was the last thing that any of us want to do. We're there to support the team. We had to make a point about the sort of what we felt was pretty draconian like punishment towards a couple of our members at that point in time. And we stand by that sort of decision making, but equally, we know between now and the end of the season, we have to make as much of a difference as we possibly can. Continue to push the bits on sort of actually the fact that singing section has been better than it, like, for the atmosphere in terms of like creating atmosphere than if it wasn't there this season. Push people to hopefully sort of back that when we actually do this, when the survey comes out from the club. And make sure that actually we still have it next year. We're still in a good position for when actually Safe Standing comes in to kind of grow and be a central force for the atmosphere that would come out of that sort of area if the club was to pursue that. Just to continue to make sure that we're kind of at the forefront of the atmosphere on a day-to-day basis, really.
I know this is going to sound silly, but I do think that between now and the end of the season, you know, we've got however many games left to save our club from relegation. You know, everyone's got to make an effort now. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're part of the singing section or not, or what your feelings are. You know, we've got to make a difference. Yeah. And if we don't, you know, we've got to take our responsibility and for what happens.
Right. I think that when, what we have done over certainly last few games, obviously notwithstanding the fact that the Arsenal game we stayed silent, but in the majority of, well, in all games really, we've made sure that we've been with the team for as long as possible. I think there was a slight bit of aggro towards the end of the Chelsea game when it became apparent that we weren't going to get anything out of that. Okay, well, where does your feeling lie with regards to the manager? That potentially is going to come out at that moment in time, irrespective of whether you're in a group or anywhere in the area, anywhere in the stadium, really. Same thing happened at Forest away. There was a lot of like sort of anti-Rodgers feeling at that point in time. You end up with a lot of blue on blue action, really, at the time. And it's not something that's at all ideal. But equally, if you support the team for 85 minutes and you know that the game's drifting at that point, why not vent your feelings at that point? Because the players have got to know that. The manager's got to know it, that they're not performing to the level that we want from it. And I have no issues with it, as long as you're supporting the team for the vast majority of the game until the game is gone, then that's absolutely fine with us.
was like the I was just thinking, Charles, the Duisburg game last week. They were 2-0 down. Well, 1860 were 2-0 up away, and they ended up drawing 2-2. And at the end of the game, the 1860 players went over, and there was just nothing, was there? They didn't applaud or anything.
Yeah,
they were fuming.
Yeah, they were, and that's it. But they gave them 100% support throughout the game, and then obviously at the end they didn't particularly give them a fantastic reception off. It's a long way back from Duisburg to Munich after throwing away a 2-goal lead against probably one of the worst teams you'll ever see.
All right, top man. Chelsea, was there anything else you wanted to add or speak about, mate?
No. Cheers for having us on, lads. Appreciate it. And anytime you want any sort of atmosphere-related discussion, just let me know.
All right, top stuff. Well, look, we'll look out for that survey encourage everybody, if you've got an opinion on it, to get involved in it and make sure the club knows how you feel about it. And hopefully, kind of moving forward, it'll be a better thing for everyone. But, mate, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, cheers, lads. All right, take care.
Top man. Cheers, Chelsea.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
Right then, top stuff, Cholsey there from Union FS. So yeah, a reminder once again, look out for that survey. And I'd encourage everyone to take part in it, whatever your thoughts on it are, because ultimately the more people that take part in it means that no one can then complain with whatever decision is then made at the end of things. If you're watching on YouTube at the moment, you'll see that me and Rick have got a couple of bucket hats on. Mine is Austria Vienna. It's the Vienna Derby today. Jordan's now got his Boca Juniors one, but Rick's got the Leicester bucket hat.
I have, and the reason why I've put it on, and sorry if you can hear my daughter singing in the background, which
you definitely can.
So we've just had Chelsea on from Union FS, which I'm a big fan of Union FS, and I like what they're doing, you know. But my only criticism of them, they sold these hats a couple of years ago. Look at the size of them. Look at that.
You've either got a massive head or the hat's tiny.
Well, I have got a big head, but I did. I remember asking them, do they come in sizes? And whether it was a boy, they said, no, it's fine. Honestly, it'll fit. And look at that. It's just perched on like a little fez.
we've just been speaking about the fans and some issues that we've had with Union FS this season. I did want to quickly bring up something which happened in the stands yesterday. Now, at the end of the game, lads, the players, as they do, come over to the away end, clapped. And then Brendan Rodgers came over and did his little clap. That's the one, doing his little clap. We all know it. We all know exactly how it looks. But there was some boos directed towards Brendan. And there was then also a Rodgers out banner. And that Rodgers out banner was from Becky, who was on the show last week. And I want to talk about it because there were some fans literally trying to rip the banner away from her. And there's then a bit of unrest and argument then amongst the fans because of this incident. So I'll get your thoughts in a moment on the banner itself. But the boos, how do you feel about this? Because I'll be honest, I am now at the point where I am Rodgers out. I am. I don't like despise the bloke. I'm clearly not as vehemently out as other people, but I know I do think we do need a change. But I just didn't really think that the booing was necessary. I just thought it was a bit odd. You know, don't get me wrong, we're still in a shit position. We know that. But we've just done a very, very decent, half decent performance. We've just picked up a good result. There was just, I just thought it was unnecessary, to be honest. And I don't think it's particularly helpful. And look, I know that fans obviously have every right to voice how they feel, etc. So I don't want to kind of censor people and tell them not. I just personally thought it was unnecessary. George, what did you make of it and what did you hear about it?
Yeah, I'm just a bit distracted because I turn around and Lewis Boamorto is on the pitch and Mitrovic looks like he's about to fill Harry Maguire in. So I don't know what's going on there. But look, fans have got every right to voice their opinion. Obviously, not everyone's going to agree with it. I just feel like we got a point and played fairly well.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of pick and choose your moments of doing it. I mean, I missed the Chelsea game. I watched the game over in Germany, but I wasn't there. I feel like there was, at the end of the game, there was a similar thing. I don't know. It's just shit, isn't it? It's just shit. Like, if people don't want him there, they're going to voice their opinion by booing or with banners or making their feelings known. It's kind of the only way you can do it. then again, not everyone agrees with wanting him gone. And, you know, in these situations, I feel like it's always the people who want the manager sacked are louder than the people who want him in.
Yeah, and it's weird, though, you know, because this is obviously a massive topic, isn't it? And it's, I know that that Twitter isn't always the best kind of gauge or of kind of what the general public think, because it is always like a loud minority. But I really do think that there are more people who are Brendan Rodgers in than people recognise. Now, there's so many people I speak to. And then even in the stands yesterday, you know, the fact that people were so angry by having the Rodgers out banner, the fact that people were annoyed that people were booing. You know, I think there's this consensus and this feeling among the people who are Brendan Rodgers out that they think that everyone is Brendan Rodgers out. But there genuinely is. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, and I wouldn't speculate. But I would say that there's definitely more people who still are backing the manager than probably people recognise.
Yeah, and like I say, it's like if you wanted the manager gone, the only way you can kind of voice that opinion is, you know, you're paying your money to go down to the game, you train, drink, food, you know, you're looking at 100 quid easily per game away from home, and it's not exactly that much cheaper going at home. So the only thing you can do really is be sort of vocal, a banner, singing. The thing I would say is you've got to back the team in the 90 minutes. And they
did. And they were very good yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, it's just shit. It is just absolutely shit, because I do feel like the people that want him in are fairly quiet, like a bit quieter. I do feel like, you know, looking at the fixtures left in the situation other teams are in, without sounding like Brendan, it is in our hands. And also, that's the beauty of it. But within the first seven games of the season, you know, I know we've been on a bad run after the World Cup. We've been the worst team in the league after the World Cup, but we've been in every game, and we've created the chances in the games. So I think that's, and you know, you look at the board level, they're probably exactly the same, thinking we're actually not that bad. And there's a paper in the. There was an article in the iPaper, which I've not read. I've read the first line, was someone should tell Leicester they're in a relegation battle. Well, yeah, we know that. I'm sure the players know that. You know, Madison, by the sounds of it, listens to this podcast because he called someone an egg on Instagram earlier.
Yeah,
so he definitely listened. So if you are listening, Madders, good work. Nice to see a bit of fight from Madders, you know, sort of publicly. But I just thought that even that article, like Brentford have lost one game in 14, and they are Brentford, but they're challenging for the top 6-8, and a point is a decent result. So just kind of boo and want the manager out when he's coming over and thanking you for support. I don't know if it's just the right time. If we'd have been battered 5-0 at home by Bolton Wanderers on the opening day of the season, then but it's like I say, it is just a shit situation. Like, I don't blame anyone for wanting the manager out. I don't blame anyone for a banner or, you know, voicing their opinion, because they've got every right to do it. But not everyone's going to agree with you. And that's the same for all walks of life, I suppose.
Yeah. No, I've seen the fixtures. It is actually quite interesting, you know, that we only play a top four side once now, between now and the end of the season. Like, we do have favourable fixtures. But also then the flip side of it is you're going to be playing teams, if they're down towards the bottom, who obviously have got more to play for and are fighting for stuff. So it doesn't always necessarily work like that. Actually, you want the teams who are in mid-table obscurity, don't you, who are on the beach with 5-6 games left. But anyway, I thought we'd talk about that. I thought that was interesting at the end of the game yesterday. As I said, personally, didn't really like it. Thought it was unnecessary. But as George says, you pay your money. If you want to boo him, then by all means. Right. Should we do who are you?
Let's go for it.
Rick, are you in charge?
I'm going to do it. Yeah, I mean, there's no point in me actually playing because I keep winning. So might as well keep me as quizmaster.
Right, let's go.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Who are you?
You.
No, not me, you.
Yes, I am you.
Just answer the damn questions. Who are you?
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Yeah, so as a Rick pointed out, he's unbeaten. Rick, you are unbelievable at this game. So I think from going forward, you're either going to be handicapped, are you, you're not allowed to guess for the first few clues, or you're just the quiz master. Jordan, we were saying this last week. I'm not sure if you heard or you listened back. Have you actually won one yet?
I can't remember who it was.
But you've won one.
And honestly, it wasn't last week. It was the last one I was on. Rick just took it out of my mouth. It was like, you know when you have a shot on target?
Yeah.
And it's going in. Like a bit like a David Nugent against Andorra.
Or do you take a pre-assist, Jord?
Hey. How good a pre-assist? pre-assist, there's no assist, there's no goal.
So, Rick, you like this because you like to pick out the clues as opposed to just reading stuff off. So are you happy with this week's selection? Do you think you got a good one?
I think so. It's an era that I think you like, Jake.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, we're talking...
I need a win.
Yeah, I think... It could still be a bit of a battle, but I think there's enough here that I reckon, yeah, we should be able to get this wrapped up in a couple of minutes.
Right. I mean, Jordan, would you take a draw?
I'd snap your hand off for a 0-0. Yeah. Snap your hand off for a 0-0.
It's a gentleman's draw. All right, Rick, come on, mate. Let's have the first clue.
Okay, right. He was born... Oh, my daughter's coming again. He was born... on the 11th of May, 1974, okay, and he started his career at Liverpool.
Okay, so what is he, about 47?
He's 48.
48. Okay, and started his career at Liverpool. Right. Yeah, obviously going to need some more, mate.
No problem. He's 6'4". And he didn't make an appearance at Liverpool. He went on loan a number of times before going permanently to Millwall, where he made 202 appearances.
Paid for Millwall, did he? Why? I don't want them saying that.
200 times for Millwall. 6'4". 48. Now I need another one, but I think I'm going to get this very
another
soon.
Another one?
Yeah.
Okay. Warner earned the nickname Denzel because he looked like and sounded like the character Denzel from Only Fools and Horses. I have that on
my butt. What's your daughter saying, Rick?
I don't know. Hang on, what's up? She's got her baby. Look, here we go. Look, can you see her?
Hey, look. Darcy, it's a weekly appearance.
Here she is, Darcy. Who is it? Played 202 times for Millwall, played in the 2004 FA Cup final.
Oh, we did this one though, didn't we?
That oh, no, team. I've not picked someone before me, have I, that you've...
It wasn't Zach Whitbread, was it? No.
No.
No, because we did have him a while ago. He did play at Millwall, didn't he? I'm struggling with this. I feel like I remember that Millwall team very well because it was such a massive story, wasn't it, at the time?
This is a scrappy 0-0 draw.
It is, isn't it?
Territory. Right, let me... Hang on.
We really should have got this by now, Jord.
Okay, so we played for Leicester on loan
yeah.
in the 2008-2009 season, so the year that we won League One under Pearson. And I'll give you another clue. We had to make a number of loan signings in that position because they kept getting bloody injured.
This is mad. Why can we not
he
get
played
it?
Four. He only played four times for us.
He looked like Denzel, or he sounded like Denzel.
Looked and sounded like him.
Well, I'll offend a lot of people. My only Fools and Horses knowledge is dreadful, so that doesn't really help for me, to be honest. But with all the other clues, I really should have got this by now. 47, Millwall, played in the FA Cup final, played for his winner in League One. 6'4". Is he an outfield player?
No, in goal. Hence why I give you the clue about we had to make a number of
signings. Connor Keyes.
No. I got it. Tony Warner.
Yes.
Oh.
Who did you say, George?
Carla Kime.
Wasn't Carla Kime a different season?
He was Paulo Sousa.
Was that Sven?
He was Paulo Sousa, okay. Carla Kime. So yeah. I remember his last game at Norwich, and Carla Kime played in goal that day. Oh God! I mean that was a performance from two struggling sides. That was.
That's a scrappy. That's last on match of the day territory,
isn't it?
But you got the win. I mean, we need one of these wins, Jake. Why can't we? Tony Warner on the eighth go.
Exactly, mate. You know, I ground that out, didn't I? Scrappy win. That's stopped the rot.
It's a piss take now. I feel like Brendan because. You know, I'm creating the chances. I just can't.
So we'll get Jordan out banner for who are you next time.
Gotta keep Jordan in. It's our only chance of winning. Oh, brilliant stuff. Right, good. I needed that one. He had a feeling that he was goalkeeper. Tony Warner. And I don't remember anything else of him. Bit of a strange one, but yeah, that's a good one, mate. Good work. We could do a quiz as well. The goalkeepers we had that season. Can you remember them all?
There was Mark Bunn, David Martin, Tony Warner, David Stockdale, Paul Dickoff went in goal for a game. Did Dickoff go in goal for a game, or have I got that mixed up with Dean Win? No, Dean Windass went in goal for
Dean
a game,
Windass,
and Dickoff missed a penno against him, didn't he?
Yeah,
and he lost.
That's right.
That was mad. Mm. Yeah.
There, by the way, Carla Kime never played for Millwall, but he sounds like the kind of player that would have played for Millwall.
Yeah, he was Wolves, wasn't he?
And I also said Danny Dicchio, who didn't play for us. So,
striker.
I mean, I'm clutching at straws.
Yeah. But mate, you know. Yeah, one of them. Right. Let's then just have a quick chat. I mean, usually, obviously, we look at the next game now, but obviously, head into an international break now. It's probably come at a nice time for us, hasn't it? I think, you know, sometimes when you have a decent result before the international break, you kind of want that momentum to carry on. But I actually think a couple of weeks is probably for the best. It gives the chance for Christensen to get fit and Johnny Evans. I mean, I say that as if. He will never be fit. But anyway, these couple of weeks may be useful for him. I did tweet this as well, Rick. I'm not sure you thought of this, but with Maddison getting called up for England, obviously I'm pleased for him because he's, you know, he wants to play for England. Of course he does. It's the pinnacle and all that. But to me, he still isn't 100% fit. You know, there's something still, I feel like he's either taking injections or he's just, yeah, do you know what I mean? He's nursing through, he's soldiering on for the greater good and like fair play to him. But if I was him, I would probably have wanted this 2 weeks to kind of rest, recuperate and kind of then be fully fit for the remainder of the season. I've just, as I said, pleased for him. But if he's going to go away with England and then not play again, I'm not sure it's the best for him, to be honest. What do you think?
I know what you mean. From a selfish point of view, 2 weeks break. For a player who's been struggling for injuries, would be the beneficial thing. But I also think, and I know he came back and was injured for a while, I don't think we're seeing the same James Maddison as we did before Christmas.
No, we're not.
Whether he's weighed down by the A armband, weighed down by where we are in the league, I feel like he needs a game for England, you know, and he will get a game unless he gets injured again. They'll play him, and if so, maybe he comes back, you know, a bit lighter in the step and has a bit more confidence, a bit more motivation. So, I know what you mean, but I do think for the next remainder of the season, we need Maddison firing. And whether it's a risk him not playing, I feel like him playing for England might benefit. I'm so sorry, my kids are shouting at me. Darcy's now dressed up as a pirate. Here we go. Put your
let's have a look.
But yeah, I hang on. Here we go. Darcy, here we go. Look. Yeah. Look, can you see her? Here we go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We're the person, let's say, who are. Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, this is chaos again. The risk is he gets injured and that doesn't help us, but I think he was going anyway. He'll get a game from at least one of them and he'll come back and hopefully that gives him, he's buzzed and he wants to, you know, take that forward because he's been a bit quiet. Assist aside yesterday, I didn't think he played very well.
No. So then, George, next game is Palace. I mean, Christ, that's massive, isn't it? It's such a big game. Crystal Palace up next. And of course, you know, they've then sacked Patrick Vieira this week. We obviously, by the time this podcast goes out or by the time you listen to it, they may have got a new manager. It looks like it may well be Roy Hodgson, which I think is great for us because I don't think it's going to give them too much of a kind of new manager boost. I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact. So I'd be okay if they got Roy Hodgson. I think that would do us a favour in some ways. But yeah, it's a massive game, isn't it, mate? Because, you know, they are right in the mix. I'm thinking of our record at Selhurst Park. I've been there so many times and I'm struggling to think of too many wins, but I've always enjoyed the away day. But yeah, so obviously I'm heading to that one in a couple of weeks. I am looking forward to it. But yeah, what do you make of the game? Because, you know, we are going to have to really... It's going to be one for me where you're going to have to grind out something. And, you know, ordinarily it's not really our forte when games are like that. But, mate, this is a massive game, isn't it?
On that, on Sellers Park, they all kind of blend into one. For me.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
I think we won 1-0 when we won the league. I kind of remember a 2-2.
Yeah.
2-2 was it last year we turned up. But it's a tough place to go. But I think I said this definitely earlier in the pod, but... Well, on WhatsApp, they've not won in 2023, so you know what's going to happen. They're going to beat us. You can just absolutely see it. Yeah. But
they can't score goals. They end up scoring four or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Like Palace, I'm not going to profess that I watch Palace every week, but from what I can see how they play, it looks like they suit the counter attack. And even though we're away, I imagine we'll have more of the ball, which is a worry, but. You know, every time I do this call, I look at the table. They've played a game more. They're only 2 points ahead of us. I'd probably take a point, but if we get all three, we'd be like, well, we'd be above them for a start, but we'd probably be 12th with a bit of breathing space. And even looking at the table, you know, West Ham's game hands against Man City, so I think you can write that off. But we've got games hand against Everton, Wolves and Palace. And we've Yeah, you know, I think 38 points probably should, 38 should be enough to keep you up. Three or four wins, and then couple of draws, win at home, couple of draws away. Massive game. I'd probably, you know, I'd be happy there with a point, to be honest, even though they've been in absolutely rotten form. I'm going Naples on Wednesday.
I was going to say,
for the England game. I don't think Maddison will feature, certainly in the away game. I do think Southgate will probably look to play like a 3-4-3 or 3-5-2 or whatever. He probably 3-4-3. Maddison won't play. He might play against Ukraine, I would have thought, because that's the easier game. But I don't think he'll start. I think he'll probably get like 15-20 minutes because he's not fit, is he? He doesn't look fit. I'm not sure if he needs an operation or...
I think he does.
What's wrong with him, but... At least, you know, he'll probably train. You know, like I say, he went to the World Cup, didn't he? And he trained and he wasn't fit. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's a similar sort of thing. So as long as he's fresh, I don't think we necessarily, with my England hat on, I don't think we need him for those two games. I'd rather save him for Palace, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Right, lads. Any other business stage? Rick, George, anything else you want to say today? Or does Darcy want to say?
I've just told her to be shush. Told her to shush. I've got one thing to say, actually, and it's probably the most serious thing I'll ever say on this podcast. But obviously, it's been Cheltenham this week, so people might not know I'm a recovering compulsive gambler. But anyone who's listening to this podcast, you know, it's been a busy week. People might have lost all their money. They may well realise they've got a gambling addiction. But if anyone ever needs to chat about it, drop me a message on Foxy's Talk, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you can find me. Come round my house. I'll be here 24/7 for anyone that has got an issue and doesn't know how to help themselves, because I found help and I wouldn't be here if I didn't. So, yeah, that's just wanted to say something meaningful for once. But, yeah, so just reach out to me. But hopefully everyone is well and doing okay.
All right, mate. Well said. Nice. Serious, Rick. All episode today as well, mate.
Yeah, don't worry. That won't happen that often.
Right then, lads. Well, look, George, mate, enjoy your international break. Enjoy Napoli. Enjoy the week. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and we'll speak to you soon. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6-4 baller. I wish I was like 6'9" so I could get with Leo. She, cause she don't know me, but yo, she's really fine. You know, I see her all the time, everywhere I go, and even in my dreams, I can see my way to make her. Sports Social Podcast Network.